Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
La-di-da, la-di-da.
He's looking at you, kid.
Let's put a smile on that face.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
It's Midday at the Movies. I'm Tom Hall. A new survey by Film Industry Insiders shows that it's not just the pandemic that's keeping people out of theaters. What will it take to lure them back? Jed Dietz and Ann Hornaday join me. Plus, he was born and raised in Baltimore, and he's risen to become royalty on Broadway. Theater critic J. Wynn Russick talks with the one and only Andre DeShields, and she offers her reflections on the legacy of the great Stephen Sondheim. First, the news. Good afternoon. Welcome, everybody. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Today, it's Midday at the Movies with our good buddies, Jed Dietz, the founding director of the Maryland Film Festival. Hey, Jed, how you doing?
Great, Tom. How are you?
Doing fine. Thanks. And Ann Hornaday, the film critic for the Washington Post and the author of Talking Pictures, How to Watch Movies. She joins us on our digital line. Hey, Ann.
Hello, Tom. Hello, Jed.
So I want to jump right into this survey that was conducted by sort of movie insider types. Jed, who did this survey of moviegoers, and what were the big takeaways for you?
There were several, and I was very excited to see this happening because it's a slightly different format than the MPAA has been doing for the last multiple years. I mean, really since World War II. And I think it'll be very helpful as all of us in the exhibition and distribution side try to sort of figure out as the dust settles from pandemic, although this is maybe not the exact right day to say that. But the guy running it was a research guy at one of the big talent agencies, United Talent. And he's assembled a group of anthropologically trained and other statistically researched people. This first report, and they'll do it, repeat it quarterly, showed about 51% of the audience had bought a ticket during pandemic, 51% of the previous audience, which sort of startled me. I was interested that it ramped up this quickly. It was a very narrow demographic, 25 to 45-year-old white males, mostly urban. It concentrated in the way we've seen for years, where there's some people who go to the movies a lot, and then most people go infrequently. And to me, the big takeaway, was, as the staff I know at the Parkway is thinking very much, is, you've got a big part of the audience, mostly female, that is not reengaged with movie theaters yet. And, we're at the very beginning of figuring out this post-pandemic. There's safety issues and comfort issues, but those have been around for a long time. I do think the pandemic is the big new thing that the overhang of that will be measured through the survey every quarter.
Sure. And Ann, as Jeff mentioned, they are going to start doing this every quarter. The exhibition folks, the folks who run movie theaters, have some big challenges if this survey is to be believed. It's not just the pandemic, but it's the experience of movies itself, going to the movies, and price is a real barrier for a lot of people. I mean, the price of the popcorn, the price of the Coke, the price of the ticket itself. And it's interesting that women are the ones who are the most reluctant. The reluctance and the infrequence that they talk about in this survey are more often than not women than men. What do you make of that?
Okay, insert glib joke about high executive function here. But other than that, I think, first on the price issue, I know that that's true, but I also know that even with all of those, like you said, the concessions and the parking and the tickets themselves, movies, I think, are still considered for a family a relatively cost-effective way of getting out of the house and entertainment. So, within the constellation of other options, I still think movies are considered, and Jed would know more about that than I do. But in terms of the women, it's interesting. I've made the argument over the years that women have a lot of, well, first of all, we have a lot of decision-making power within the family, about a lot of things, about what we eat and how we spend our time and what movies to see. And so without, again, reducing things to gender roles, I just think that probably reflects mothers making decisions about their kids. And I think that poll was taken before young children started being vaccinated, and that's been a major issue with getting people back into theaters because that's a big audience, that family audience. And that's why, like films like The Boss Baby and things like that have gone either direct to streaming or hybrid. So I think once we see children and young people getting more vaccinated and boosted, that might shift, and women as decision makers might feel a little bit more comfortable going back in. And I've had a couple of experiences recently where, just as a matter of course, not only are people masking in venues and theaters, but they want to see your vax record. And again, I just think if that starts to become more of a habit and more of an accepted thing, to just be out in the world, that could, like you said, these are challenges for theaters, but this information is actually really valuable in terms of what people do need
And
to be able to come back.
one of the conclusions of the survey was that a vaccine mandate would be good news for theaters and good news for the movie exhibition business. So Jed, over the weekend, according to the New York Times, this Thanksgiving weekend, ticket sales in U.S. and Canada, so this is North America, at about $96 million. And in 2019, that same weekend, $181 million. So people, maybe the 50%, 51% are going back more frequently than we might have thought. But the numbers just simply are not nearly as good as they used to be. And the fact that they are going to start now surveying folks like this 4 times a year, I think will be interesting because I think Anne makes a good point. If the survey was taken before kids were able to be vaccinated, that's going to change the next time. So it'll be interesting to see what happens the next time. But if as a person who's affiliated with the Parkway Theater here, I mean, when you see this kind of demographic information, mostly men, mostly city-based, and mostly, interestingly enough, leaning Republican, being the ones who are at the moment going to the movies more often than anybody else. How does a Charles Theater or a Senator Theater or a Parkway Theater respond to that? I mean, is there anything that people are going to be doing in the short term to address this kind of information?
Yeah, and the give the staff at the Parkway tremendous credit. They've already done, really started pre-pandemic, a great deal of outreach. And the things I've been to at the Parkway, and I've seen some big time movies like Dune and House of Gucci and stuff, but they've done these special events like this Showtime movie that Stanley Nelson made called Attica. Actually, both Anne and I attended that, but the audience was mostly film students, a large contingent from Morgan and other schools. I had been to one previously about Muhammad Ali, also with the filmmakers that in that case zoomed in. Stanley Nelson for the Attica film was there in person, and also film students. So it's very de different demographic than what this report is showing about people who are paying are coming into normal movies, normal Hollywood movies, and I think that's going to be the challenge. And I think even in the Hollywood movies, the studio distributed movies, one thing that everybody's trying to figure out is this impact of streaming. And it's very interesting that Encanto was the big movie last the Thanksgiving weekend, And by the way, your numbers are right. The 2019 numbers for the Thanksgiving weekend, Frozen alone did more than all the movies that are out now did. And Frozen 2 alone. And I think that, you know, that's going to be the trick. And Disney withheld Encanto. They were showing trailers on Disney Plus, but not the movie yet. They are now. And that for sure helped the weekend. And I just think, you know, that's the balance that everybody's going to try to figure out, because it's not like there's a right or wrong way to distribute a movie. Although, you know, I'm a big partisan of movie theaters and seeing movies in movie theaters. But I think the issue is, it's a business, and the studios are trying to figure out how do they make money in the best way.
Yeah, sure. So, Ann, let's talk about a couple of movies that folks can check out this coming weekend. Here's one that you can only see in theaters. It's at the Charles Theater here in Baltimore, Belfast. I've heard wonderful things about this movie. I guess this is a Kenneth Branagh movie. Tell us about Belfast, Ann.
This is a real charmer. You're right, it's by Kenneth Branagh, and it's a deeply personal memoir about his growing up in that city, and his parents' decision to leave. He wrote it during the COVID shutdown, which I think is really interesting. We're seeing a lot of products of artists using this last couple of years to just sort of sit and reflect, and we're seeing a crop of really deeply personal, kind of contemplative, reflective movies, and this is definitely one of them. He filmed it entirely in black and white. It stars Katrina Balfe and Jamie Dornan as his parents, as this incredibly glamorous couple, I interviewed him about the film at the Middleburg Film Festival, and he said that's how he saw his parents, was just these really, you know, attractive. And when you see their pictures, they really are. I mean, they're just, you know, neat looking people. And his father was getting work, construction work over in England. And so he wasn't there during the week. And it's really about his mom keeping everything together while the troubles are brewing. And so this is a coming of age film that takes place against this incredibly high stakes backdrop of the troubles, but also this really wrenching personal story about one family's decision whether to stay or go. And two terrific supporting performances from Kieran Hines and Judy Dench as his grandparents. But great Van Morrison soundtrack, really lovingly filmed and obviously made with a lot of emotion, and it's a crowd pleaser.
Jed, real quick, what did you think of Belfast as well?
Well, I agree with absolutely everything Ann said, totally charming. I think this idea of showing this neighborhood full of Catholics and Protestants through the eyes of this little boy was just a really remarkable choice, because half the time in the movie when there are, you know, some violence in the movie, you don't even know whether it's Catholics against Protestants or Protestants against Catholics, and he doesn't. And he's, you know, he's worried about how does he meet the pretty girl in school, you know, and that's the, you know, so he's not thinking politically at all, but he understands that it's a tough atmosphere and his parents are trying to make choices.
Yeah, Branagh is an incredible artist, so stuff that he does, he's one of those guys that's just worth checking out. Let's listen to a clip of a movie called The Humans. I know you both have checked this one out as well. It's not in theaters. It's streaming on Showtime. Let's take a listen.
There's this comic book I was obsessed with as a kid. It's about this species of half alien, half demon creatures and the scary stories that they tell each other.
Oh, my!
Are all about us, human.
I love that in times like this, I have a home base, a family I can always come home to.
To knowing this is what matters, right here. Because everything anyone's got, no matter who you are, everything you have goes.
Well, that's a positive way of looking at things.
All right, The Humans. It's a Thanksgiving movie. It takes place pre-war in New York. Anne, what'd you think?
I was really taken by this film. It's based on the play by Stephen Karam, and he directs this. It's in fact, it's interesting. It's sort of similar to The Father from last year, which was also directed, you know, by a playwright adapting his own play, in which the setting itself, the apartment itself, is another character. And it's very it's stylized. This is a family gathering for Thanksgiving in this empty Chinatown apartment that has all the weirdnesses of a post-war apartment that's really run down and has clanging pipes and sagging walls and weird plaster work that you're not quite sure what's under that. And Karam sort of films that to maximize the horror elements of that. But then he has this very typical American family, you know, having a kind of improvised Thanksgiving dinner around a card table. That was Richard Jenkins and the great Jane Houdyshell that we heard there. Amy Schumer and Beanie Feldstein play their daughters. And, you know, it's, I thought it was a really touching sort of portrait of family dynamics that are completely subterranean, but then completely obvious in terms of the reactions that people get from the things that they say to one another. While also being really heightened, you know, dramatically. It's just, it's a very nice mix of naturalism and kind of surrealism.
And Jed, just got a couple of minutes left. I want to talk about The Power of the Dog. It is at the Parkway Theater and is also streaming on Netflix. This is this Benedict Cumberbatch book, or movie rather.
Yeah, it directed importantly by Jane Campion, who's an amazing artist in the film community. This is the first movie she's made in 12 years, but she was, I think, she's one of the very few women to be nominated for Best Director in Oscars. I think she was the first or second. And this movie's been already highly tributed just coming out of film festivals. It's an extraordinary story, I think, about this cowboy in Montana, played by Benedict Cumberbatch, who is a character that could have been, you know, found in multiple Clint Eastwood movies and classic Westerns. And he's mean as dirt and tough as nails. Turns out he's also highly educated. He comes from a privileged family. His brother, you know, wears bow ties and they run this huge ranch. And it's almost a horror movie. I think it's sinister from the beginning. I mean, this character that you see from the very beginning that Cumberbatch plays is unpredictable. You just don't know what he's going to do, and it looks like it's going to be damage. And then the movie, it's this exploration of you know, sort of hysterically heightened masculinity and all the cow hands around him.
And he's another guy. He's just an incredible, incredible artist, Cumberbatch. So it's good to check him out. I'm sorry, we have a truncated time for movies this afternoon. So that is all the time we have. That's The Power of the Dog. It's at the Parkway Theater. Jed Dietz, the founding director of the Maryland Film Festival, and Anne Hornaday, the film critic for The Washington Post. Thanks to you both, and happy holidays. We'll see you in January.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you. Thank you both.
Coming up, Midday Theater critic J. Wynn Russick will speak with the King of Broadway, Andre DeShields. She'll also have a review of Tootsie at the Hippodrome Theater and a reflection on the life and legacy of the great composer and lyricist Stephen Sondheim. Midday on Theater is next after a quick break. Stay with us.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.